Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, tennis fans from around the globe. The following program is a presentation of the Yellow Ball Network.
Are we on?
Yep, we're on.
All right, let's go.
Broadcasting live from the Tennis Dynamics Studio in downtown Marietta, Georgia, this is the We Coach Tennis Radio Show on the Yellow Ball Network. Your host for the show this week is J.P. Weber.
Everybody, welcome back to the We Coach Tennis Radio Show. It is the 31st of March, and today we're going to talk about the movie Whiplash. If you want to call in on the Yellow Ball Hotline number. That number is 646-652-4856. We try to broadcast every Tuesday at noon. Sometimes we make adjustments for the schedule of our guest and things of that nature. So we will we'll try to do that every week. Again, if you want to call in, the Yellow Ball Hotline number is 646-652-4856. If you want to listen to this show and you can't call in and can't listen that way, go to iTunes, put in We Coach Tennis under podcasts, things of that nature, and it'll all come up great. So it'll be great. We have a great weather here today in Atlanta. And I'm going to take a quick commercial break. We're going to come back and hopefully have some guests to talk about the movie Whiplash with us. And we'll be right back. This is J.P. Weber. Take it from the kid. The 2015 Handmade Charlotte Marietta Grand Prix Series of Tournaments is a great way to spend the day with the family playing tennis. To find out more, go to www.tennisdynamics.net. That's tennisdynamics.net, where you can call us at the Laurel Park Tennis Center at 770-919-8602. Hi, coaches and players. If you play on a tennis court in the Southeast, you've probably played on a tennis court designed, constructed, lighted, or resurfaced by courtmakers.com. Marshall Dye and the guys at Courtmakers will work on any type of court. From my experience with them, they work in a professional manner, they show up on time like they say they will, and they never leave a mess. Courtmakers can provide for all equipment needs. Call them at 770-795-8400. 770-795-8400. That's courtmakers.com.
Hi, this is Coach Chuck Creasy. I take great pride in calling it the way it is. It's a meat and potato principle of coaching that no one really cares what you know unless they know that you care. As a parent also, I want this and very skilled hands working with my youngster. Coach J.P. Weber's 30 years of experience speaks for itself. Go see him at Laurel Park in Marietta, Georgia. His website is tennisdynamics.net. tennisdynamics.net.
We're back here, a little bit of around midnight, Thelonious Monk. My dad took me to see a lot of jazz early. As a young kid, he took me to see a lot of jazz, and I saw this movie, Whiplash, had come out, and I really didn't even know what to expect. I went and watched it, and it's got so much of what we deal with on a daily basis from a coaching standpoint. So I've got before I do, you know, with the movie, we're looking at the competition, the rigor, the discipline, what you'll learn from a mentor, how a mentor will work, all those things. And then after that, there was a thread on the We Coach Tennis site. Dr. Brown posted, Dr. Ray Brown out of the Houston, Texas area posted a post about what you would learn from the movie Whiplash, and it got quite a bit of response. So I wanted to dedicate a show. I'm in between shows. We've still got to get on a couple of guests. I've got Cliff Ritchie, trying to get him on, a couple other people in the next couple of weeks. So we'll try to do it. Real fast, let me jump up on the 78-foot soapbox. Look, we got to get out there. It's my belief, and I've tried to express it all along, modern technology there, live radio, modern technology, phones going off everywhere. Okay, all right, back to the 78-foot soapbox. Look, I've for a long time now been telling people that the USGA's got a strategic plan, they've got a plan in place, and they're going to get after it, they're going to go after it by hook or crook, just like our president just recently said. They're going to get this done, and they're going to get a lot of stuff done, and they're in the process of getting ready. I'm telling everybody, they're going to hit us with another bunch of stuff here again soon. They're going to, I just talked to Chuck Creasy. He's down in Florida. They're throwing out the idea of getting rid of all the 12 rankings and all the other stuff again. They're getting ready to, they're continuing on this, and I believe that the problem that exists with this is because I want to know and want to figure out who wrote that strategic plan. So, at any rate, I don't think it was written by coaches, let's put it that way. And we've got to be on the ball here. We've got to be ready. And the people out there that are watching, listening, if you think tennis is changing, just wait. In the next few years, you're going to see the USGA come forward with a lot more stuff. They're not giving up. They're not backing down. No matter what people say, they've got a strategic plan, and that's what they want to do. All right, so that's my 78-foot soapbox for this week. Please try to follow us on We Coach Tennis with all the updates with regard to that. Now, let me play for you. I want to play for everyone a clip from, and I think it sort of encapsulates, it's a clip here from the movie Whiplash, and then hopefully we've got a couple of guests. We can get them on here right away. Let me just play this quick clip. And it's about three quarters of the way through the movie, and I think it's explanatory.
I'm sorry.
No, listen.
Nah,
hey,
I'm sorry.
I get it. I know I made enemies. I'm conducting a little they brought back the JVC Fest this year. They got me opening in a couple of weeks with a pro band.
That's great.
Yeah, it's all right. Truth is, I don't think people understood what it was I was doing at Schaefer. I wasn't there to conduct. Any fucking moron can wave his arms and keep people in tempo. I was there to push people beyond what's expected of them. I believe that is an absolute necessity. Otherwise, we're depriving the world of the next Louis Armstrong, the next Charlie Parker. I told you that story about how Charlie Parker became Charlie Parker, right?
Joe Jones threw a cymbal at his head.
Exactly. Parker's a young kid, pretty good on the sax, gets up to play at a cutting session, and he fucks it up. And Jones nearly decapitates him for it. And he's laughed off stage. Cries himself to sleep that night. But the next morning, what does he do? He practices. And he practices and he practices with one goal in mind, never to be laughed at again. And a year later, he goes back to the Reno and he steps up on that stage and he plays the best motherfucking solo the world has ever heard. So imagine if Jones had just said, well, that's okay, Charlie. That was all right. Good job. And Charlie thinks to himself, well, shit, I did do a pretty good job. End of story. No bird. That, to me, is an absolute tragedy. But that's just what the world wants now. I wonder why jazz is dying. I tell you, man, and every Starbucks jazz album just proves my point, really. There are no two words in the English language more harmful than good job.
But is there a line? You know, maybe you go too far and you discourage the next Charlie Parker from ever becoming Charlie Parker.
No, man, no. Because the next Charlie Parker would never be discouraged.
Yeah.
The truth is, Andrew, I...
All right, so that's a clip. Movie Whiplash, 2014. If you haven't seen it, go see it on iTunes. The guy, J.K. Simmons, got an Academy Award, I think, for it. And then the kid, Miles Teller. Excellent. Fantastic movie. They got some great actors in it. I loved it. There's so much to learn from it. I got a caller here. Switchboard's litting up, and I don't... Okay, I got too many. All right, let me grab this first caller here. Caller, are you there? 571?
I'm here, JP.
Is this Dr. Brown?
This is he. Well, Ray's good enough.
Ray, Doc, how you doing, Doc?
All right, buddy. All right. I'm glad you're doing this show. It's very important.
It is, isn't it? And I loved your post. You put a post up on We Coach Tennis, and in the post you talked about, I think it was probably 15 or 20 things that you can learn from the movie. And I want to get, I'm hoping I can learn. I've got a ton of people that wanted, and I really would like to get you and Coach Creasy on here and then try to get anybody else maybe that calls in. But I'd like to start with you guys. And, you know, Coach Creasy was known for sort of being a, I don't know, people have sometimes described him as the Bobby Knight of college tennis. And then you don't mince words yourself. So tell me about what we can learn from the movie Whiplash, and then let me get Coach on, and you guys have some go some talk back and forth.
Okay. Let me clarify one thing. You know, it is a Hollywood movie, so they exaggerated the abusive language and so forth, just sort of so it doesn't go over the average person's head. So you have to see that in context. But the first thing that stands out, and I think this is essential in any coaching situation, is the word demand. You must perform. Don't give me any bullshit. Demand. Do it. Don't want to hear excuses. You're going to do it. And I think that comes through time and time again. Demand is what you must have. And believe me, kids will respond. I have a whole bunch of them in our academy that are very good. You can demand anything of them. They will rise to the occasion. And that point about Charlie Parker that Andrew has said, you know, do you think you'd ever discourage the next Charlie Parker? You got it right. No, you don't discourage Charlie Parker. That, and he's a metaphor in this conversation, of course. But you don't discourage this kind of guy. In fact, you weed out the non-Charlie Parkers. I just got weeded one out this past week who just couldn't put in the effort that I required. And he was assistant as well, and I weeded him out, and now I have a little double duty because I don't have an assistant at this time. But you gotta, you know, put your principles first, not your convenience. So that's you know, there are 16 things I wrote down. Anybody at the top of an enterprise, I don't care whether it's mathematics, management, the intelligence world, tennis, I've been at all of these. I've been with all of these at very high levels. They're sort of assholes. They're almost ruthless assholes, but they also can be your best friend. Now, the reason, the thing that brings out the ruthless asshole side of them is you don't perform, they're going to kick you out. You are not going to stay there. I was in that position several times in my life. I remember as a junior at the University of Colorado one summer, I was taking a graduate course. There was like everybody in the course was a graduate student except me. Giancarlo Rota, a very, very famous person visiting from MIT, he walks in the room one morning, he puts the problem on the board, he looks around, and he points at me and he says, solve it. If I had said, oh, well, professor, I'm not ready, or, oh, I wish you had told me you were going to ask me this, or, you know, I'm not feeling so good. Any of those answers, I don't go to Berkeley. Instead, I stood up, trembling in my boots, I solved that problem, I got the letter of recommendation, I went to Berkeley as a graduate student. That is the world you were in. At the top of the food chain, that is the world. That's who these people are. I work with them every day, the best in the world. And I'll tell you, they can be nasty, or they can be your best friend. And when they get nasty, it's when you are screwing up and you're not meeting demand. I had a professor send me something, well, a couple of weeks ago about one of the introductions I had written. He writes back just one sentence. He says, Ray, your introduction's a mess. Fix it. He didn't tell me what to do. So I go and fix it. That's the world you're in. Okay. Demand, demand, demand. You have to prove you have the right to be there. You go to a place like Berkeley or any top enterprise, the people at the top will say, you don't belong here. I'm going to drive you out, just like in the special forces. And if you don't have what it takes, they're going to run your butt right out of there. And they do that. They do everything they can to dry you out. They will push you so hard, you'll think you'd rather die. There was a time when I was at Berkeley in graduate school, my first year was so hard, and I came there as a freshman. I had been taking graduate courses in mathematics as a freshman. It was so hard, I considered transferring. I looked at the rankings of schools in mathematics. Berkeley was number one. Cornell was number 10. I thought, well, I better transfer to Cornell. I'm not going to survive here. But I didn't. I toughed it up and rose to the top of the class. Took another year, but I did it. So that's the thing you're dealing with. If you don't bleed, and I mean it metaphorically, although I have had kids, Jana Vanderbilt, my head pro, when she started playing tennis with me, she would hit so many balls, we had to bandage both of her hands with gauze, wrap them both up because they were both bleeding, and she would not stop. She would not stop.
Doc, tell me if you can, real quick, tell me if you can, can you give me a few more of the other ones and let me get Coach on here? I want to get him on with you and get some exchange going back and forth and a few other callers. Tell me the other, you had, they will do everything to drive you out, right?
Yes.
They're going to push you so hard that you think you're going to die. You'll
absolutely
be taken away. What were some of the other? I'm trying to think of the other ones. I didn't get a chance to write it down before, but it was a great post and there was great exchange on it. Some people looked at it and told you they thought, you know, it was nuts and you were crazy, you know, writing about
it. That's the point of view of mediocrity. Salieri in the movie Mozart, he was the prince of mediocrity. People who are mediocre will always say that people who make demands, outrageous demands, are crazy. That's the only way they can deal with it, because they can't comprehend the difficulty involved. And that's what I stress on my students. And we had six gifted and talented kids this weekend and who are off the scale. Most of the kids are 3 years up in mathematics and things like that. They just have a different point of view. They're out there. They're going to achieve. You cannot stop them. Just don't get in their way. They will run over top of you. And that's the kind of personality we want to see. As I told them, I said, you know, the way I weed out students, I put out, and by the way, I put out all the ROG balls. I put the ROGO balls out and the yellow balls out. They could do whatever they wanted. There was a stripe vest from the mixed martial arts, everything. You name it, it was on that court. Well, only one player walked over to the ROG, and he picked up one, it bounced it, threw it away, and went over to the yellow balls. Right there. There's your filter. Not one of those high achievers, and they were as young as 10 years old, 9 years old. They were 9 to 12. Not one of them would touch those ROG balls. And we have a little 9-year-old girl playing with a Federer racket using both hands. She's a half pint. She wouldn't touch them. You don't want any part of that stuff. They high achievers, that's a different animal. It's a different animal. And that's where you get filtered out in a place like Berkeley. They're going to find out, are you worthy? Are you worthy to be here? And if you're not worthy, you're going to get the boot. And you can go cry about it, that's fine.
Let me see if I can get Chuck Creasy on here with us. Coach Creasy, are you there?
JP, I'm just like Dr. Brown. I'm so glad you're having this program today, because this hits the nail on the head for what is probably the top and most important issue that we need to speak about and solve today. You know how much into loaded language I am, but a good friend in the mid-1980s told me this saying, that the world promises you buckets of rhinestones, but God gives you the chance to make one diamond with your life. And our society has allowed, we were making cubic zirconiums that look like diamonds, and this needs to be talked about, because it's a battle over not just ideologies of dumbed down. And Dr. Brown, of course, is describing so many things that high achievers thrive to and strive for. But we have an ideology out there that is winning this battle of dumbed down, and it's terrifying. And, you know, if you want me to, I could elaborate just a second here. I wanted to. But what he said is true. It's the absolute pursuit of excellence has been, is not avoided. And some people have the absolute pursuit of excellence, and we all, 100% of us, will take things that are easy or take things for free, but none of us are proud about it. Just like this young man, when he ended up quitting, you know, he took that route, but he wasn't proud of it, you know, of course. And the other thing is the lack of maestros that we have out there. Maestros in education, maestros in music, maestros in the film industry, maestros in tennis teaching. But those people who demand a level of excellence, and, you know, we might not understand everything in that movie or agree with everything in that movie, but anybody that seeks excellence should absolutely understand the need for these maestros and the respect, you know. But our society is now not only framing dog poo, and in other words, saying we're framing dog poo and trying to peddle it, but we're also framing very average achievement, like the gold balls for team participation at the national, down the Mobile you were talking about. But we're framing all these things with participation trophy. We're framing mediocrity. But the danger, and I, for years I was saying, well, that it's low-hanging fruit for the high achiever if everybody's going that direction. But now they're blocking the pursuit of excellence. And this is what Dr. Bram could speak to this. I'm so upset because not only is mediocrity being promoted, but they're blocking with their rules and mandates and all these things. They're putting governors on the engines of kids. Like that social worker that in that movie, that was a big, big scene. Where everybody's going to be to the place where they're like the guy's girlfriend who just was sort of average, and she that's what she was about. So anyhow, the big point I'd like to make is that we are in a battle over ideologies, and just like there's no excellence in music, there's no real excellence in art, there's no real excellence in, I mean, restaurants. We've mastered mediocrity with our chain restaurants, and you can't find a good restaurant. And so you don't find these kids that have been allowed to run, you know. And so anyhow, that's what I'm going to say as I start out here today. But thank you for having this show.
Both of you in this. He set them up to compete, and they competed until they bled. Some people might look at the movie and say it's disturbing, guys. Dr. Brown, you and Coach Creasy, what do you think about the sort of mind games and things that he did from a competitive standpoint? Dr. Brown, what do you think?
Well, you know, each of those, that's a part of a coach's art. And, I'm not going to comment on the rightness or wrongness of his art. Both Chuck and I have our ways of putting our foot down or in a person's butt, if that's necessary, or kicking them out of the whole program to achieve our results, to achieve excellence. And if sometimes you achieve excellence by kicking somebody else out that everybody sees, oh, my God, that guy just got kicked out of here. I don't want that to happen to me. And so everybody buckles down and performs even harder. So, but Chuck made a really important point. Not only are they the Salieri of tennis, we see, they're obstructing the high achiever. They're not only promoting mediocrity, they're obstructing the high achiever. And that is dangerous stuff. Okay, most people are mediocre. That's fine. They're going to, you know, they'll bag your groceries at Kroger and, you know, fix your car battery. That's fine. We don't get on without them. We got to respect everybody and their job no matter what it is. I mean, I sweep the courts up. I pick up the balls along with everybody else. But we don't obstruct a high achiever, and that's where they're really going wrong. It's not bad enough to promote mediocrity. It is an absolute criminal act, practically, and speaking metaphorically, to obstruct the high achiever. The kids in my program, you can't get in their way. Don't get in the way of a high achiever. They will run over top of you. And to put the handcuffs on the high achiever, like the ROG, is just plain irresponsible. And I'll tell you why this is happening, because the people at the top, they themselves are not high achievers. They're in a bureaucracy. That's not a high achievement. It's like mediocrity and bureaucracy are synonymous, absolutely synonymous. The only way you get to the top of a bureaucracy is by being mediocre. And so consequently, if a bureaucracy is in charge, they can only promote mediocrity. They don't know anything else. If you're not a high achiever yourself, you can't teach somebody else. You haven't been through the mill. You haven't been through the grind. You have to be there, boots on the ground, to see what it takes to do that. And these guys who are gravitate to a bureaucracy also gravitate to mediocrity. ROG is a mediocrity.
Fletcher, get yourself up, coach. Yeah, go ahead.
Could I jump in there real quick?
Please.
So right on, but let me make a point. He's so right about bureaucracies, but listen. Let's go a step further. What I've learned is that the bureaucracies are hiring third-party consultants to lay the framework for a lot of what we do. In other words, they hire marketing people or they hire so-called experts in some type of child psychology are these people. Now, there's two things about that. Number one, those consultants shoot toward the norm or the medium. They do not shoot toward excellence. They shoot towards participation goals. Okay, the other thing is they don't have enough skin in the game to have any emotional attachment. For exactly, you know, this movie was so good because some of the people do not have enough skin in the game. They can't understand it, whether it's that social work. The guy's father. The father was doing the father smother love that you do with children, and the good father wanted the best for his son, but he's blinded because of his own instincts for smother love. Now, with that, understand these third-party people can never make the right decision for excellence. They can only make a decision for mediocrity. And because they don't have any skin in the game and they take the safe route, they drive between 55 and 70. For a bureaucracy, this is a safe move because if the consultant fails, the bureaucracy is not held accountable. If they succeed, the bureaucracy looks like they have hit a home run. So that's a point I wanted to make to Dr. Brown's comment, which he's exactly right.
Both of you guys, I don't know if you see it the same. I remember having, Dr. Brown, you mentioned demand, and Bobby Knight would set himself up in a situation where he was going to demand of his players this, that, the other thing. Now, he made sure he always had a qualifier. He said, look, I never demanded anything of my players that they didn't understand. So you can't demand something of the players that they don't understand. But Fletcher sets himself up sort of in opposition to his players. Any comment on that where, Coach Creasy, that there's sort of a philosophy about that, or there's a psychology to that where the players have got to go through him to get what they want. He's got the three drummers there competing and going through him, and it's got to be his tempo.
You want me to comment?
Yeah.
This is the coaching 101. Coaches of the past would always set themselves up for all the players to dislike them and either even hate them at some point. But here's the point. They were always known as the authority figure, and respect was given for their position. Whether or not you like your coach or your boss has nothing to do with it. By chain of command, that's their position you respect. But good coaches, good military leaders, set it up to the place where you almost hate them, but in the meantime, the players come together, the core comes together, and it breeds unity within. I saw, and I forget the movie, it's like From Here to Eternity or one of the war movies, World War II, where the commander, you hated him the whole time, and you said, what is he doing with that? He's so unfair. At the end of the movie, you finally got about 10 minutes to go. They all hate him, and they're all rallying, and the commander says, well, we're finally ready for war. They're a team now. Let's go. I'll worry about them liking me or not later. And this was always the way that great teachers did it. But somehow, with computers and with too many middle management people getting control of doing the things right instead of doing the right thing, there's a big difference between those two. Computers allow you to do wrong things right or right things right, but they never teach you to do the right thing, and that's important. But the computers have allowed middle management people or people who are mediocre and are to impede the progress of those who are pursuing excellence. And they don't understand this process, and they impede it. And if they just stay out of the way, it'd be low-hanging fruit to be successful. But the lowering of the bar of excellence is the biggest concern we have. Because when you lower the bar of excellence, your highest achievers now are marked the same as medial achievers. And that's where we're at right now, and that's why our whole society has become a dumbdown. Proof's in the pudding, guys. Hey, the proof's in the pudding. You know, show me something that's just excellent where you go, wow, I'm inspired. Dr. Brown, when's the last time you've just been supremely inspired by something, you know, that we're doing? You know, we're not inspired. That's the tragedy.
Yeah, that's true. Let me throw something in there. One of my students went home one day and tweeted on Twitter. She said, is it reasonable to hate your coach after practice? No, she said, is it normal to hate your coach after practice? I thought that was kind of funny. I never expected somebody to tweet that. But a great leader is not destructive. Demand does not mean abuse. And there was some Hollywood abuse in there. The whole point of that was, you know, to kind of reach everybody. So he was maybe somewhat abusive, but you can be just that demanding without being necessarily abusive, because you either do what I ask you to do or there's the gate, there's the door. Yep. I even threatened one student. I said, I'm going to get me one of those bells they got at Navy SEALs, and any time you can't cut it here, you go over and ring the bell, because you're out of here. If you don't like that, then I'm sorry. That's the way we do business here.
Well, let me try something from a little bit more. You know, whiplash is sort of a mysterious injury. They talk about it being a mysterious injury, and it comes as a result. I think, you know, you get hit by a car from behind, and later, you know, 3 weeks later, somebody says they've got whiplash. So all this demand, all this pressure that we put on our children, we're putting this pressure on them, Coach. You guys, you and Dr. Brown are demanding. Is it maybe, though, that this movie might have been looking at this, the mysterious side of it, or the, in other words, there's a, you know, of course, the main character or the J.K. Simmons character, Fletcher, in there, he was shooting for this, but did he not get maybe some, you know, through the pressure, did he not create other problems for the child on the other end? I mean, obviously, I think one time at the table, Coach Creasy, they were sitting there at the dinner table and nobody understood him because, he doesn't have any friends. He has no friends. I mean, one of the results, if you're going to pursue excellence, you're going to do this, you're going to have to give up quite a bit. You're not going to be able to go to every party, every party, are you guys?
You can party your whole life later, but, you know, look, that there was a few critical scenes. That dinner table scene was an important one. Everybody in his family, nobody, his father sort of understood, his uncle or nephews or whatever did not, his cousins did not understand. His girlfriend didn't understand. That was a pretty interesting thing about his girlfriend. He didn't understand the social director is a bothersome thing. That's what you see all the time now, people who impede that. But, you know, the thing that is brilliant was I thought the guys, as a maestro, not respected. He was feared, but he had such a quality for excellence, the 98th, 99th percentile. I am in tennis today because of working 1 year for Harry Hotman. Room, board, and experience is what they used to say that you got when you work for Mr. Hotman. But he was a maestro. He understood the difference between the 98th to the 96th to the 94th to the 84th percentile, and nobody else knew, but you knew that he knew just like a Swiss watchmaker, he understood the human dynamic of competition. And it was brilliant, and because of respect for him, I went into tennis instead of trying to coach high school basketball. Nobody understands this, or most people do not. And most people think, oh, he's brutal, he's abusive, Bobby Knight was this. But in the end, I was telling somebody earlier today, about a month ago, my sophomore 1966, my sophomore English teacher died, Brother Raymond Harrington. And I don't remember most of my high school teachers, but he died of 87 years old. Roughest, toughest teacher I ever had. One misspelled word, automatic F, and all those things. Everybody hated him. I think I got a C's and B's all the way through, but there is no way on this God's green earth that I could have ever written the books I've written or the articles or anything without him beating us to a pulp mentally and trying to squeeze everything out of us. And the point is that I remembered his name, and I, every one of us has somebody like this in our lives that we will respect till the day we die. However, we will, as human beings, we will take the easier course, the easier route, because we are human beings, but none of us are proud afterwards. And, You know, this is a fantastic movie for that human dynamic. And I understood all of it. I didn't maybe agree with every bit of it. But my golly, some of the biggest thing was the fact that other people didn't see that. But the kid's drive was nurtured. It was brought out. It was brought out and forced out, have you. But it was something that all of us need to take a close look at. And we got to get off of our daggone Candyland world of driving 55 to 70 miles an hour with everything we do.
All right, let me take a quick commercial break. I'll take you guys out with a little Gene Krupa. It says we're talking about this jazz show, Whiplash. The number to call in is 646-652-4856. And take a real quick break. We'll come right back. And I want to ask you guys, when we come back, I want to talk about the rigor of what it takes to be excellent, the rigor and the discipline, and ask you guys about that. So hang on. I can't think of a better place to go than courtmakers.com for any of my court equipment needs. Any kind of equipment that you need for your club or facility. Windscreens, nets, net straps, benches, scoreboards. You can find all of this at courtmakers.com. Or like them on Facebook and see all the latest stuff that they're doing in court construction, resurfacing, and lighting. That's courtmakers.com, courtmakers.com. Good one. All right, so coaches, got you back here. This is all stuff. This is the stuff my dad had, and the jazz. And the guy says in there, he says jazz is dying. And Coach Creasy, you lament tennis is sort of dying. if you had it to do over again, would you go back into tennis?
Oh, what a beautiful death it is.
They're grinding away. It's almost like a grind. They're just grinding away. They're not giving up.
Comment I made was to some people was, we have always had chess. If you want to make the game of chess a little shorter with your format, fine, but don't make chess into checkers and try to sell it as fine wine. And then
Coach Creasy's down in Florida. They invite him. USTA invites him. It's a big convocation. They're all together. It's the greatest brains in tennis are all down there. They got them all together. They're talking about how they're marketing tennis. They're going to shorten everything. He's walking around passing out his 10 commandments of no ad is a no go. So you can imagine how that was received. Okay, guys. So in this movie, it showed the rigor and the discipline, and you have to do something over and over and over again. And we don't want that. We don't. That's not what works now, is it?
JP,
well,
first, go ahead, Dr. Brown.
If you're going to achieve something, yes, it does work. It's the only way there. There's no other path.
It's hard to look.
There.
You've got 1,000 Coach Creasy back when they look. Now, I hear that. Yeah, you want to be good, but they want to be good. They want to have the title, right, Coach? They want to have the title, but they don't want it to be hard.
Well, no, let me tell you, they're wonderful people working towards trying to figure out the solution. I think they are trying to. They know they've got pushback. There was a lot of people in that room where they got a lot of pushback. The mediocrity is being spurred by some of the consultants, but the people who were really excellent, they had an Olympic volleyball, hockey, and lacrosse coach. They were tremendous. That you could see the respect that everybody gave them immediately because they had been in the arena. But the point being is that we have wonderful people, but Dr. Brown's right, in a bureaucracy, it's hard to get many things done. A leader does not, as a leader, you have to sort of stick your nose out there to say, look, here's the route we're going. And, you know, and I think they have some wonderful people there that are trying to find, but you're not going to find it. You have to separate in tennis, if you're going to talk about participation versus performance. In performance, you got to open the gates and say, let's go, let's compete, let's go after this. Participation, you have hard tires, nice guys, and a lot of good jobs being thrown around. But, you know, you need to separate those two. I think that they're aware of that. I think they're aware that they need to try to do that.
Yeah, you made a good point there, Chuck. That needs to be separated, but you're trying to sell one from the other, and that isn't going to work. You're going to make them both bad. But one of the things about accomplishment is the demand is beyond anything you can imagine. It is unbelievable how hard it is to achieve. What a teacher and coaches, we must do is show, here's what's required, you choose. If this is not what you want, which is fine, it's got to be fine, go up to this other little club called King Daddy. I says, look, those are the people for you. You don't belong here. So we have to make the demand. They make the choice. And the choice, and also there's this issue of sacrifice. There's no sacrifice in the hearts of a person who is an achiever. The sacrifice would be giving up doing extra practice and hanging out with a friend. That'd be a sacrifice for
them. That's right.
Whereas the average person thinks the extra practice is a sacrifice because they can't be with their friends. That's completely backwards. It's just plain stupid. Sacrifice is not what it is. It's opportunity. It's the difference between sacrifice and opportunity. And about friends, you're going to have fewer friends. You know why? Because friends, the average person does not relate to the high achiever. They will drift away. That's just the way it is. But you will get new friends, and those friends will be a very narrow set of high achievers. That's why we had this little gathering this weekend of six of my brainiacs. I want them to know that there's, each one of them knows, five other brainiacs out there who are also good players, just like them, and they got five friends. You may not have, I asked one of them, I said, how many friends do you have at school? He said, well, maybe one. I said, well, now you got five more.
Dr. Brown.
You know, they stayed there. I said, it was open-ended. I want to know how they're going to stay there. We're talking about 9, 10, 11-year-old kids. They stayed for three hours, no coercion, nothing. I didn't push them. I didn't instruct them. I let them self-organize. At the end of 3 hours, they can get ice cream. They all went and got ice cream. They sat in the shade, and they all talked together like best friends. That's an achievement.
Dr. Brown, I had a question for you. You grew up in the era, a few years older than me, but I remember very well the things that happened as a child and, you know, the emotions and things really lock in some things. But my mother used to preach a lot that the turn and the downfall of America started in 1957 with Sputnik. And what happened when the Russians put up Sputnik is that we got rid of our trade schools, and we started going high-tech testing with everybody. We started diminishing our trade schools, and we started trying to say everybody's a high achiever. And the dumb-down, she said, sort of started with that. And to the place now where, my golly, college education has been watered down and so diluted, high school educations are just laughable. The only way you get a great education, it has to be a very strict academy, or homeschooling. Homeschooling is maybe the last great hope for being challenged greatly. But do you, the besides just the socialist moves, do you compare, would you agree with what she said in 57, that was where things changed?
Well, that's an interesting point. It could be, you know, and I can't really, I don't know if I can really say I'm qualified to comment on that point exactly. But when you started, if you start disrespecting the average person and think the average person has to be excellent, well, that's a mistake too. When I go to the store, I am friendly to the cashier. Is the person who I'll help the person put bag groceries in the bag. These are all important people. They want to go home in the evening to their kids, have a little cookout in Saturday in their backyard with their neighbors. That is 90% of that's the maintenance. That is the infrastructure with which we live, and they give us the opportunity to push back the envelope. We got to respect that. And I think what you're making, Chuck, is they're blending. They're trying to blend those two things, and they're not all high achievers. If they want to go to trade school, send them to trade school. If they want to go to college, send them to college. Respect them all. Have equal respect for all people because we all need each other. But don't try and take the high achiever and make them mediocre. That's a mistake. And that's what
guys,
we see.
And I want to bring – I've got a caller I want to try to get on here in a second, but with you guys to round it off here. But, Coach Creasy, you've often told me they don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. Did Fletcher care?
Of course. I mean, I watched that movie a second time so I could try to pick up on the subtleties. Of course he did, but he understood the difference between he was the 99th percentile and the 96th percentile. You know, and his job was, like he said, it wasn't to just lead the band. I've always used music. I said that we are trying to make band members out of orchestra members, and we put the band member in charge of things where, you know, the orchestra, and he never should be there, you know. And so, yes, he cared. And being liked is probably the last thing a great teacher wants. A great teacher wants to be trusted, and then he earns respect. And then you might like him 10 years later, and you go, wow, that's what he was trying to show me. So, you know, with that, this, and then you hate this where people say, oh, you're disrespecting me, which isn't even a word, by the way. You know, I mean, you know, you don't give respect until you trust and you see the work that someone has done. But that was a good, that was
could he,
good
could he,
stuff.
Could he make a business of it? Could he do it? Could he compete with the rest of the people, Dr. Brown, in the country and make a business of it?
I don't know. If you recognize that there's the average people and you put them with the average coaches and they go out there and have fun, that's marketing. That's good marketing. If you recognize the great achiever and you pull that person aside and put them in a group with other great achievers, then you have a different program. That looks to me like you can put together a good business, and the people who just are the average achievers and are going to go home and, you know, they're going to work at McDonald's or the cashier or whatever, that's okay. I can't get my burger if they're not there, you know, and they don't care about this other thing, but they tolerate us. They tolerate the high achievers, and they support us. So, by the way, a coach who wants to be liked is probably going to have trouble coaching. They're going to be trouble, a lot of problems, getting the person to achieve all that they can be. Because as my student tweeted, is it normal to hate your coach at the end of the day, after practice? They're not going to like you. And I don't worry about being liked.
Coach Creasy,
achieving.
I remember many morning madness. You never cut a player. You didn't, you know, Dr. Brown. It's not, let me, you know, it's funny, you know, people don't eliminate people from programs because it's a macho thing to do or because they won't get off on eliminating them for the program. I don't think that this guy Fletcher eliminated people because it was macho. You know, they did have him. I think he had probably lifted weights a little bit before each scene, and, you know, he looked very macho. But in the end, I don't think he was doing it for a macho reason. Coach Creasy, you never cut anybody for your program. A lot of guys did. They ran off into the fog of the early morning fog at Morning Madness.
Well, JP, I always no. Listen, people say, "Well, I'm familiar with that." The no cut program. Look, the no cut program they have at high school is
terrible because they allow, and here's what you do. I tell people to this day, I only kicked off four players, you know, two for drugs, two for stealing. But the point being is that I probably had 80 or 90 quit. And you basically always, with the best or the least players, you have a litmus test when you start. And we always had 2 to 3 weeks of 5:45 running to see if people love tennis enough to do the running. And I had two very good players. I had recruited them, and they quit one of the first days. They said, "What does all this running have to do with tennis?" And I said, "Nothing but everything." You know, and it's one of those things where you basically you're not trying to, you know, you're not trying to hurt anybody. You're not trying to be a hard guy. You're not trying to get created this image. But basically, if people quit on something because of a hardship that they experience, they're never going to stay through the tough times. So hardships and toughness, the tough coaching and all those things that this guy did, he knew the quality that was needed for excellence. And he basically set up barriers and said, get over the barrier, get over the barrier. You can move forward. Otherwise, go ring the bell. And boy, oh boy, do we need these kind of things so much more. It's and again, I don't agree with all the tactics, but I understand 100%. You yearn, Dr. Brown yearns right now probably for something that is pursuing excellence. Someplace you see, wow, that is really excellent, you know, not the junk that we're framing. Boy, it's awful. It's just so disappointing. I told people high school tennis is not a sport. It's an after school activity now. Tennis is the only sport college coaches never go to see kids play at high school. It's been dumbed down so badly just because it's been made participation. But we're just doing this over and over and over, and God help us.
Let me grab a caller here real quick, because it should be Lisa Stone. She has the Parrington Aces show. Lisa, are you there?
I'm here.
So have you been able to hear a little bit of this banter back and forth over the movie Whiplash?
I have, and I don't know if you saw it, JP, but I actually wrote an article for Huffington Post on this exact topic.
I did not see that. I have not. I don't get my HuffPo stuff too much these days. What? How are these guys striking you? There's a lot of people. I think in the New Yorker they wrote that the movie was way off. It was a disturbing and sick movie. These guys don't see so much disturbing and sick about it. How do you see it?
Well, first of all, I urge you to take a peek at the article because I think it will give you a little bit of insight as to my thought process. But I found it extraordinarily disturbing because it stuck with me for for days, weeks, so much so that I saw it and then I saw it again a week later and then I saw it again a week after that. And actually, when it popped up on iTunes, bought it so that I can continue to watch it over and again. I found it extraordinarily disturbing from the standpoint that, as y'all have been discussing, we don't appreciate teachers or coaches or leaders who push us outside our comfort zone. And we are, as y'all have been saying, satisfied with mediocrity, and it's a shame, and that's the aspect I found disturbing. Now, let me temper that by saying I don't think this approach is for everybody, and nor should it be for everybody. And Dr. Brown was alluding to that before. You know, we need people at all levels in our society, not just high achievers. High achievers, you know, if they were left on their own to survive, would have an awfully hard time. And so I think it's important that we recognize the needs of the individual and, you know, provide opportunities for the individual to have the types of teachers and coaches and instructors that they need. One thing that I may disagree with you guys a little bit on, I heard y'all talking about the role of the father in the film, and frankly, I thought the father was doing exactly what a father of a college-age kid should be doing, which is
smothering
his... I'm sorry?
Smother dad.
No, I didn't think he was smother dad. I took a different tactic on that. I felt like he was there to pick up the pieces when he thought his son needed them. Now, was he misguided? Somewhat, yes, especially in that last scene, you know, where he was standing in the wings ready to put his arm around his boy and, you know, tell him it's okay and don't worry. That's not what his son needed at that point. The dad misread that, but I think the dad was doing exactly what he was supposed to do. And I think that that Fletcher got what he was striving to get out of that kid, and I think that kid got what he was striving for out of himself by continually pushing himself and reinserting himself in Fletcher's world. And I just thought it was amazing. And one of the things that I wrote in my Huffington Post article was that, you know, we oftentimes tell our kids good job. We tell them, you know, you did fine. Don't worry. And we don't understand that there's a lot more inside of our kids than we recognize, and that we are cheating them by letting them get away with doing a good job when many times they're capable of doing way beyond a good job. Excuse me, and maybe even doing a phenomenal job such as the world has never seen before. And so by letting them get away with good job, we're not only cheating them, but we're cheating everyone, because we're not allowing our child to develop to their maximum.
That's a great statement, Lisa. I guess you and I have never, we talked, I think, some long time ago, but a very great statement. Good is not great. And if the kid can do great, and the only way you're going to find out is you got to push. It's like a doctor. You don't know how to cure the illness unless you feel pain. Pain tells the doctor what has to be cured. And so we have to push until we see, all right, and you have to be respectful of the child. We don't, I mean, our program is very difficult, very demanding, but we are safety fanatics. We will not let a child get hurt. But you really do have to be prepared to push to the point that you know this is as far as this kid can go. And he'll tell you, there's information there. But if you let up before then, you are doing a tremendous disservice. I love the way you put that, Lisa. You are doing a disservice not only to him, to yourself, but to this country. And we really have got to do better. I want to give Chuck one thing about his guy that likes to run, didn't like to run. Quitters will always find a way to quit. And you gave him a way to quit when you had him run.
Can I make one other point real quick, Dr. Brown, in response to what
please,
you just said?
Please.
Hurting kids physically is only one aspect. There's also hurting them emotionally. And I don't think that any of us feel as though every kid is built for being pushed to their maximum. Not every kid can withstand that. They don't have, you know, the constitution to handle it. And I think that's where things get really tricky. And I think, you know, all of us have, I mean, Chuck and I have had this conversation a million times. JP, you and I have had it too, that our society has shifted in such a way, and it's not just American society. This is in all developed countries. I mean, I talk to parents all over the world, and we're all facing this, is that we've become overprotective as a culture, and we're so worried about, you know, pushing too hard and sending a kid over the edge, and there's something to be said for that. There's a reason we got to this place. So now we have to find our way back to center a little bit, and I think movies like Whiplash maybe will open people's eyes to the fact that we've gone too far the other way, and it's time to start pushing the pendulum back towards center so that we can get back on track and see excellence come out of our kids again.
Well, Lisa, that's a good point. A good coach, now, of course, I'm 70 years old, so I've seen a lot. You can recognize how far a kid can go, and you stop before them. And we have kids that say, hey, well, I can do one more. And I say, no, you're not going to do one more. You don't make those decisions. If I see the kid is just really overly, and I know they believe they can do one more, but I know that one more is the one they're going to get hurt, I stop them. And there's a learning process. It takes a lot of experience to be able to pick up when a child is showing distress and stop it. And by the way, the new term is called helicopter parent.
Right. Yeah. And that's not a new term so much. I mean, I've been a parent for 26 years, and I think when my oldest was born was when this whole concept of helicopter parenting was first coming into existence. And, It's been an interesting evolution to watch, and I am now my youngest child is 18. He's finishing high school, heading off to college in the fall, and I think if he had been pushed at age 10, 11, 12, even 13, 14, he would not have responded in the way that he responded at age 16, 17, and 18 to that pushing. And so for my individual child, it's been a process of him needing to mature and, you know, me understanding where the line should be as the parent and understanding what my role is in the relationship between parent, player, and coach. And it's a learning process. And for those of us who didn't grow up in the world of competitive sports or competitive anything, I mean, I was competitive academically, but other than that, you know, was never really exposed to this level of competition, it really is a learning curve. And you know, one of my goals has been to help coaches understand how they can educate us parents to do a better job in our role as parents so that we don't undercut your effort as a coach and we don't, you know, helicopter so much that we interfere with the development of our children. But it's a big challenge and it takes a lot of work on everybody's part.
Well, it's been a great show. Is Coach Creasy still there?
Just one real quick comment and Lisa, congratulations. Your articles are great, and so is your show. And, I mean, you give a great perspective, sort of the one that parents and coaches get so much from. But I had one thought as she was talking. Here's where the problem comes in. And most parents who are close enough or most coaches are close enough to the youngster, they get to a level of sensitivity are caring for the person where they know the levels that they can push them through, just like this guy knew what he was doing. But here's the point, here's the problem. Let's say we take a gold ball winner at Mobile who was on a team that was maybe at a losing record, and they're a gold ball winner, USTA gold ball winner. And then you take a Kalamazoo winner from Kalamazoo that had to win like 11 rounds or whatever they have to win and had to sweat so much. Then you say, hey, both of these guys are gold ball winners. Let's send them to this coach and let's get some tough training done. Well, they're both put on the same pedestal and the same equation there. It's just like somebody who gets straight A's at a real bad school than somebody who gets straight A's at a Westminster Academy down there in Atlanta. They're not equal. And this is the problem that we face in our culture is that we have framed baloney and tried to make it look important. You know, we're trying to sell, chicken salad. You know the saying I'm going to. But you're basically, this is our problem, is that in general, we're framing too many things. We're able to frame things and make them look like real achievements when they're not. And this is why we have so much mediocrity. So anyhow, great show, JP, today. Excellent. It's great to talk to Lisa.
I'm going to let you have the last word on that, Coach, and we'll cut it there. I've got to get out and get some stuff done. Thank you to Lisa Stone for calling in, Dr. Brown for calling in. Dr. Brown's down in Houston. Lisa Stone's here in Marietta, Georgia. She's got a blog, ParentingAces.com, and you can find her article on the Huffington Post under The Problem with Good Job. And so with that, Coach Creasy's down at the Citadel. This has been a fantastic show. I appreciate everybody coming on. And we'll be back next week. This has been the We Coach Tennis Radio Show on the Yellow Ball Network. Check in here with us every Tuesday at noon and listen to another great coach talk about what makes their program a success. No!